You're listening to Radio Albion, talk radio for the nationalist community.
Hello, welcome to the Daily Nationalist. Today is the 8th of June, 2023, and this is Matthew Raphael Johnson. As always, keep Sven in your thoughts. You know, if you look at the Swansea Prison website, it shows you every way to get in touch with him. Just make sure he knows he's not alone. This week, it may come as no shock to learn that we're going to talk about what's left of the Ukrainian war. If there's ever a country that cannot fight a war of attrition, it's, you know, what amounts to the third world country of Ukraine. What little they had was in the East. I've wrote about really the two revolutions in Ukraine, the first in 2004 and the second in 2014. And I wrote something 2015. Let me read a passage from it. I just got finished talking about the 2004 Orange Revolution. And I say, nothing has changed in coup 2 in 2014. The results were identical, and both the journalistic and academic establishment in the West have refused to learn anything from it. The same trajectory occurs, the same economic agenda, the same secretive forces, and yet the elite use the same slogan and purely political cover stories. These new governments begin raping the country, selling off anything that looks valuable, and shipping it to Western creditors. Most of it went into secret bank accounts. The Western press ceased speaking of the Orange Revolution as a second coup immediately sold off a full 25% of the remaining GDP of the country. Unemployment in 2005-2006, as well as 2015, remains about 50%. Steel alone was the only thing earning any money, and it accounted for 40% of exports, all to Russia and China. I wrote so consistently on from both 2004 and 2014-15. And it's hard to believe. And I was saying the economy was gone in 2004. And in 1993 alone, a full third of the GDP fell away. And it wasn't just the privatization scams that went into offshore accounts. It was also IMF money. And I laughed. I mean, these bankers knew they were never going to see that money again. But I wrote many years later that really the one of the last bits of value and collateral that Ukraine has is its own land. And I also remarked painfully that the last line of credit can be underwritten only by Ukrainian blood. In other words, Ukrainian soldiers. And that's the tragedy here. If you've been following my career, you realize that for years I have been decrying this rape and assault from the oligarchs in Ukraine, which had the potential of becoming an absolutely dominant country in alliance with Russia, China, and the East. It was absolutely essential, unlike the Georgian War in 2008, late summer 2008, that Ukraine be removed from the Russian orbit, despite the fact that its entire economy in the 90s, 80s, 90s, and beginning of the 2000s, was geared towards the East. It was, you know, their standards and everything were Eastern. So when some idiot is writing in the Wall Street Journal and says Ukraine may be looking at a recession, it just increases the amount of pain that I have in listening to people and reading people who, as of, you know, a year ago, didn't know what a Ukraine was, now is going to lecture about their economic fortunes. There is no Ukrainian economy. The only thing of value that it has are the land itself, physically, and the bodies of Ukrainians. Now, I want to talk about specifically two articles. The first is from April this year, and the second is from June 5th. Now, I was known for saying that in early March, mid-March of last year, the war was largely over. In other words, you know, fuel, ammunition, the Air Force, all were destroyed by that point. A lot of communications, the government, and it was only the rescue by the West and the use of mercenaries and the endless financing of this completely broke and broken government that kept them in the war. Russia, of course, is well aware of where everything is coming in. And this is why, no matter how many billions are poured into Russia, they're running out of ammunition. And in fact, as I speak, they're running out of artillery shells. Now, I just got, you may have heard that Skype. The Skype just told me, a friend of mine in Ukraine said that the Ukrainians have blown up the dam near Kharkiv, not Kharkiv, Kherson, and the city is starting to flood. Of course, they're trying to blame it on Russia. The media just does what it's told, but obviously it doesn't benefit Russia. These are Russian-speaking areas, and it's caused a diversion of resources, and is going to harm the recovery of these areas. It shows you who we're dealing with here. They'll destroy their own country rather than give an inch to the Russians. That's how desperate that they are at this point. The best of Ukrainian men and tank crews and everything is long gone. That was true by the middle of March. And because so few people know anything, the media just followed the State Department and Department of Defense line on all of this. But the level of fanaticism in which the regime supported Kiev, a government that has 0% support, it stops at nothing. I mean, there are no ammunition stores left in the West. Nothing like this even was contemplated during the so-called Cold War. So they're running out of everything. Their fuel, their logistics, everything else is at a standstill. And, you know, the Washington Post, who is certainly no authority on any of these things, has finally admitted that their friends are facing a critical ammunition shortage. What they seem to be doing, according to Karsten Ries, the author here, is that they're trying to find unexploded shells, you know, the ordnance, and trying to improvise a new shell out of it. And it is an artillery war, largely because in the early, you know, the first 9 months, the Russian mission was very limited. Not that the media said anything like that, but it was just to liberate the East and to create a buffer with whatever's left of the Ukraine. Ukraine is primarily in its eastern part. It's not a viable state if it's just a central and western region. But Ukraine never had a chance. But that wasn't the point. The point was to, as a debt servicing measure, to destroy the manhood of that country. In America, we do it figuratively. There, they do it literally. But that's the level of desperation here. And Russian casualties are pretty low, because they're relying on air power and artillery. Not to mention the fact that in the early part of the war, you didn't have that many Russian soldiers. Well, that's changed, as we all know. As it stands now, about 90% of casualties are inflicted by artillery. They don't have, Ukraine doesn't have the proper number of guns or shells or trained crews. And any replacements for spare parts and everything else are nowhere to be found. I'm sure you know about this nonsense offensive, which was largely an invention of the Western press. And someone like Zelensky, who just does what he's told, I mean, he has no political agenda other than just being a lackey for the West. I mean, he's an actor. That's what he's supposed to do. This offensive could never possibly have happened. There is no chance of it becoming a mobile war. Russia has the largest store of tanks in the world by far. It's way into the five digits. But Ukraine has very few. They're not interchangeable, and their crews are completely inexperienced. Once Russia mobilized, realizing just how fanatical the West is going to be, Russia's front is not going anywhere now. Ukrainians can't move men from one area to another, and there's no power left for the electric trains, the highway system. But it's not just a negative matter. Ukraine can't function. It's that Russia has begun the process of rebuilding the East. They've developed a rail logistics, a roads, and depots all around eastern Ukraine, which explains the explosion of the dam. And Russia also has a substantial number of trained reservists. Their defense production is state-owned, unlike in the U.S. They can mobilize a huge number of men at a moment's notice. They've doubled their material production. And, you know, the West simply, just like it happened in Georgia, they don't want to be involved in a bad loser, a humiliating defeat. It's just been from the middle of March of last year to now, it's just a long, drawn-out defeat of the West, using Ukrainian army as their pawn. As of today, the NATO countries have only delivered something like 50 tanks, at least 50 heavy tanks, and there's nothing more coming. And any more will come probably in late 2024. Russia's churning out 1,600 tanks a year. When I say air power, Russia's relying on air power. I'm also talking about drones. This is one of the first times that drones are a major player. Military drones are a major player in warfare. And I say all this because I was reviewing a few things that I said over the Russia-Georgia war of 2008. And while, of course, in the beginning, it was the exact same thing, the exact same rhetoric as you hear today. Let me quote this ridiculous Washington Post editorial from 2008. This is concerning Ossetia and Russia's invasion of, for a very similar reason, a pro-Russian area. The principles at stake, including sovereignty and territorial integrity, apply well beyond the Caucasus. To abandon Georgia and its fragile democratic rose revolution would send a terrible signal to other former Soviet and Warsaw Pact republics that to Moscow's dismay have achieved or are working towards democracy and fully independent foreign policy. You notice that nothing in that quote suggests any functional knowledge at all. You could say that about any situation. These are vague terms meant to cover over a lack of understanding. An independent foreign policy, kind of like an independent media, it means privately owned and liberal, which, of course, is what democracy means. Then it was in 18th, August 18th, that same year, the Post attacked when Medvedev spoke of Georgian war crimes. Now, once American soldiers were being captured by the Russians, and that was all over the news, especially the Russian news. Now, while Washington denied having anything to do with the training, the Israelis were heavily involved in training the Georgians, and gave them the backing for try to take Ossetia again. That, you know, that was being blatantly contradicted. But in 2008, even there, the media was not nearly as centralized as it is now. But the minute when that stuff hit the news, especially when Human Rights Watch fully admitted Georgian war crimes, a lot of support for it fell away. And I'm arguing that that may be the case here. The USA, presently, we're running out of anti-artillery radars. You know, the radar system is, the electronics are extremely important here. Russia is using now a group of mass-produced guided bombs up to 1.5 tons that could destroy any fortified position. And it's about a 40-mile range, 40,000 feet in altitude. Actually, I spoke about that many years ago. Ukraine, who doesn't really have a missile defense anymore, they're using the old BUK, Soviet-era, air defense, which, of course, no one in the West can really train them on. So many of the massive number of Ukrainian casualties are done without ever seeing a Russian person. So any media report, and this was a case in Georgia, any media report of Russia running out of men or equipment or ammunition or anything else is an absolute lie. Russia's unemployment figures came out, and it's at the lowest in many, many years. The fact that NATO has run out of Stinger anti-air missiles and the Javelin anti-tank missiles, which they were, you know, people who didn't know the first thing about this were trumpeting in the cover of Time magazine. But then the Washington Post has, you know, said that just like in Georgia, Ukraine has lost almost all of its experienced soldiers. And Ukraine suffered the absolutely irreplaceable loss of most of its experienced commanding officers and even NCOs. You know my contempt for the official experts who are paid to lie. And more recently, they're being paid to lie that the city of Bakhmut or Artemovsk doesn't make any difference. They were trumpeting it a few months ago. Now, of course, it doesn't matter because it's lost. It is a key strategic point, however. It's a strategic logistical center and a big fortifying position. What the blowing up the dam, again, which I just heard, how that's going to affect it and affect the distribution of resources is another matter. But Artemovsk, it is a full east and center control place, control location, all the way to the railway line, breaking into the remaining western portions of Ukraine from the north and south. So Russia is now overlooking the western fields and dirt tracks where Ukraine, with very great difficulty and heavy losses, could haul a few supplies. That means that the Ukrainians in Artemovsk are completely cut off, and their freedom to maneuver is now non-existent. They can't evacuate their dead or wounded, which I've said many times in the past. They can't rotate forces. They can't receive ammunition, food, or anything else. But this is all fully acceptable by the Western democracies to punish Russia for making a fool of the United States. Zelensky is almost a stereotypical Jew. Just a few months ago, Zelensky, you know, who wouldn't know a rifle if you hit him with it, ordered his soldiers to sacrifice their lives for Artemovsk and promised a relief offensive to rescue them. And of course, that never happened. He went to Chasiv Yar, same time, and gave a pep talk. They're going to liberate this city. And of course, nothing happened. As the author here says, Russia has fortified its grip on the city and is marching fast forward inside it. Russia has even tightened its grip on another strategic and fortified city, Avdiivka, during the last month, and this simply proves that Ukraine is out of strength and that the West is losing the will to support them. But an offensive, of course, requires a huge number of men, a tremendous amount of money. It requires a strong air force. It requires all of these things that any substantial invasion force is going to have to field. We all know it can't happen. They used to say that, you know, the snowfall was going to, it was too snowy, and yet it didn't hamper the Russians, who advanced in that period of time. And then they said it was too muddy, which in June no longer works. And with the Russians, I mean, they're what they call the Lemming Offensive. Whatever Ukraine can muster with a Ukrainian general staff, by the way, with Purge not that long ago, very inexperienced, and is receiving orders from the West, not from the president. The Lemming Offensive is coming, which is simply throwing inexperienced troops, conscripts, at the now battle-hardened Russian forces. Not just battle-hardened, but now fresh and well-trained and well-fed, well-prepared, well-supplied positions in the East. On a daily basis, Russia's destroying between 10 and 15 artillery pieces and about 10 armored vehicles, few tanks, every single day. They may, you know, Ukraine, as the mud dries, may get a handful of tanks, usually older models, without a lot of spare parts, fuel, or really trained crews. But, you know, another month would mean something like another destroyed 500, 700 Ukrainian armored vehicles and artillery pieces. What Ukraine is expecting now is roughly 1,200 armored vehicles and fewer than 100 tanks. So this should never have happened. We know what Putin's motive was: to rescue the East and to destroy this American colonized country of Ukraine from being this javelin in the southern heart of Russia. Not to mention the fact that where this combat is taking place is in Russian-speaking areas. But outside of the blowing up of the dam, the administrations in the East now are fully secure, are rebuilt and delivering the goods like any government would, and using the ruble, which automatically makes these people wealthier than they were not that long ago. To this day, though, the American media just, you know, they're cutting and pasting their material that Ukraine is winning and Russia is just struggling. Well, Reese, in the June 5th article, Sinking Zelensky, makes reference to a video that shows really Zelensky is a man who's just finished. The headline of the Wall Street Journal says, "Ready for the counteroffensive." They have no objective basis on which to say that. But of course, anyone who knows anything realizes that they simply don't have the resources for this. Any other normal country would have long since sued for peace like Georgia did. But Ukraine is a colony, which is, by the way, how the word independence has been redefined, a colony of the West. And they're ordered, despite the fact that the entire general staff wants peace. I mean, no general wants to see his soldiers being mowed down. I mean, even a sociopath will hate the fact that his own authority and reputation is being destroyed. But this recent video also shows, you know, Zaluzhny, who I thought was purged, but I don't know how old this video is. And these are worn, broken men. Zaluzhny, of course, has disappeared, as have the security chief, Budanov, when Russia hit the security headquarters with a huge strike. And I mentioned at the beginning of 2023, there was a huge purge of the already struggling and very fluid Ukrainian officer class. That, again, comes at the orders of the U.S., because the U.S. did that at the end of the Obama administration. And the attack on Putin, which, of course, was, you know, very poorly done, Zelensky probably is not safe, but making a martyr out of him is a bad idea. The only thing that Zelensky can do is promise this huge counteroffensive, because that's all Ukraine has to make it valuable to the West. The new excuse is that the weapons haven't arrived. And Stoltenberg from NATO said that Zelensky's full of it, because all promised NATO weapons have been delivered, many of them destroyed by the time they're ever able to be used, many of them sold on the market, So much of this stuff is finding its way to the third world, even, you know, Central Asia. As of now, the muddy ground excuse, every once in a while you still hear it, but they can't keep using this because the ground is more or less dry. The other thing, other than promising this counteroffensive, the other thing Zelensky can do is attack his, bite the hand that feeds it. The new excuse, as Reese lays out, is that they don't have the Patriot air defense batteries. They were hoping for 48 more to make it an even 50, but Zelensky's also aware, or has been told, that they don't exist. And the West doesn't have the productive capacity to deliver it, which in and of itself is a laughable idea. And now, I guess, yeah, they're probably out of air defense missiles, not that they've been particularly well utilized anyway. And Russian air power, which is always dominant from day one, that the impact on Ukraine as a whole, because of that, has been devastating. And since Ukraine keeps postponing this so-called huge counteroffensive, he makes these promises knowing he can't deliver. And the American, again, that's the only opinion who matters here, the American estimate from the Pentagon leaks says that by August, they'll be totally out of artillery shells. Whatever is left of the Ukrainian front can't function without it. Ukraine is holding back its forces to reduce losses, which Russians have been doing from the very beginning. And the Ukrainian loss of armored vehicles is down from, you know, a few months ago it was 30 pieces a day to 10 or 15 units a day. That does not include artillery pieces, because they simply don't exist, not that they're maneuvering them better. Over the next 2 months, that means between 600 and 900 armored vehicles are going to be lost. The Patriot batteries will never come, nor are crews that know how to use them. Zelensky is now in panic mode. NATO hasn't sent him any signal that NATO will promote him for membership after the war, which, of course, they're going to lose. Now, of course, for its part, NATO has two options. Option number one is like happened in Georgia. What happened in Georgia, which is to slowly turn on their former client, which is exactly what happened then. The second is to double down, and even when the war is over, to be consistently involved in trying to subvert the administration in eastern Ukraine. But that will just be where we were in the first place. In that case, it's just status quo ante. He has not received, Zelensky has not received any kind of guarantee of membership in NATO. I think very few NATO states are interested in this since they're coming there with a third world military that's just been destroyed in a war. Zelensky is in extreme panic mode. Everyone who even in the most cursory way looks at the facts realizes that Ukraine never had the ability or the resources or the logistics or the supplies or the fuel, let alone air power, to engage in any kind of large-scale maneuvers. Russia's mistake, of course, which I didn't realize at the time, was simply using too few men, because it was a limited set of goals, and they were going to be working with, hand in glove, with the militias that always are performing well. They have far more motivation than anything in Ukraine. I mean, these aren't Ukrainian-speaking areas. But having Zelensky, again, who doesn't know the first thing about weaponry, doesn't know the first thing about military life, putting his stupid T-shirt on, sometimes even wearing fatigues. It's kind of like the old, you know, Michael Dukakis in the tank nonsense back in '88. He looks like a fool. What the West does now that it has pretty much admitted that it's over, I guess there's a third option, which I've already mentioned, and that's terrorism. That's happening on a regular basis. Remember, the West has no principles at all, except for the interests of its own oligarchy. That's about it. You know, usury has to be protected at all costs. Ukraine really doesn't produce anything, and what they did produce went to Russia and China many years ago. So they have no other way to repay the hundreds of billions that have been poured into that country over the last 15 years, much of which ended up in private bank accounts, Swiss banks, and all the rest. Russia's casualties remain very low. The spotting equipment doesn't exist in Ukraine, and the high command is begging Zelensky for peace, not realizing that he doesn't have any power. Zelensky doesn't make the rules. He was installed in power by the United States for the sake of making war on Russia in a way that was never done during the Cold War. Never on anywhere close to Russia's doorstep, not even after the invasion of Afghanistan. Even in Afghanistan, too few men were used early on. At least here, unlike the Americans in Vietnam, there is only one step, the partial mobilization, and the tide turned immediately. The biggest problem, outside of fuel and men and armor and pretty much everything else, the biggest problem that the Ukrainians have is, I'm still getting intelligence from Ukraine here, the biggest problem they have is desertion. No one is going to die for Zelensky. No one's going to die for liberalism, even though that is the Western liberal demand. This isn't an aberration from liberalism. This is liberalism. And to think that the cream of Ukrainian manhood is being annihilated so that the West could make a small dent in the Russian economic world, which of course they failed to do, shows you what the West has become. This is the postmodern age, and the postmodern empires are very different from the ones that have come before. Anyway, thank you everyone for tuning in. I appreciate your listening, and we will talk to you next time. Bye-bye.
You're listening to Radio Albion, talk radio for the nationalist community.